What happened to the Puritans? A pastor friend of mine up in Maine was visiting Boston at one point, and he decided to go on one of these tours that was led through the city, and he had a tour guide that was leading them through, and he was involved with a number of people on the tour. And as they're going along, one of the members of the tour asked the tour guide, "Whatever happened to the Puritans?" Well, the tour guide thought for a moment and said, "You know, I'm not sure. Maybe they all just got back into a boat and went somewhere else." Well, that's not exactly what happened to the Puritans. So let's think about this. What did happen to the New England Puritans? This was an incredible group. This is the roots of American religious history. They, of course, came from Old England and began settling heavily in those early decades of the 1600s. I think at one point, I remember reading that in the 1630s, it was as if a boat every week was landing at the docks at Boston with a new load of Old England Puritans ready to settle in the New World. And these are the folks that, of course, give us that beginning and that foundation of Christian thought in America. These are the folks that give us these institutions, the Harvard and Dartmouth and Yale and Brown. And these are the folks that also eventually give us Jonathan Edwards and the Great Awakening. So this is a crucial question. What happened to them and what happened to the Puritans? Well, one author in a book entitled Theology in America, Christian Thought from the Age of the Puritans to the Civil War, his name is E. Brooks Holifield. Holifield gives us some insight into what happened to these folks. First of all, he wants us to understand fully who the Puritans were, and he says these were, of course, a very creedal bunch of people. They focused on the confession of faith. These were not entirely Presbyterian, so they had some modifications in terms of church government to the Westminster standards, but these were creedal folks who believed in logic. They believed in solid exegesis. They had mastered the Hebrew and the Greek text. They had mastered Latin. They knew their history. They knew their theology. They had, as it were, all of their ducks in a row. But in addition to that, they also greatly emphasized the practical side of theology. One of them was Thomas Hooker, one of these early Puritans. He represented what Holifield calls the consensus of the Puritans. And what he means by that is Hooker defined theology as a discipline of godliness, which not only produced insight into the nature of things and knowledge, but also significantly practical wisdom. So that's what the Puritans were about, theology that is an intellectual discipline, but is always very practical and leads us to living. Sometimes we say the head and the heart, and the Puritans did not make some sort of bargain there, but in fact, they saw them together, and that was a crucial part of a Puritan emphasis. And so when we begin to see, well, what happened to the Puritans, one of the things we have to see is that that balance was not maintained. As we move into the 1700s, we see this. We see this in Jonathan Edwards' own congregation, reminding them of what a genuine religious affection truly is, that they had lost some of that Puritan emphasis. But it was really in the late 1700s and early 1800s when we see the true drift. And one of the folks responsible for that is a person named William Ellery Channing. He was born in 1780, and he died in 1842. And his claim to fame is that he's the father of Unitarianism, or the father of liberalism. And what we see in his theology is the demise both of that Puritan emphasis of theology, but also the demise of that practical side of theology. And so what happened to the Puritans? Well, the sad answer is they did not maintain that crucial emphasis of loving God with their heart, soul, mind, and strength. I'm Steve Nichols. Thanks for listening to 5 Minutes in Church History. As we finish up this week, let's go back to that early church apologist, defender of the faith, Athanasius. He wrote, "In a word, the achievements of the Savior resulting from his becoming man are of such kind and number that if one should wish to enumerate them, he may be compared to men who gaze at the expanse of the sea and wish to count its waves."